just started reading like voraciously while I was unemployed, and I wanted to create a more robust life. So I would hopefully be able to withstand if this were to happen to me again, I'd be a little more resilient.
From MoneyFit by DRS, it's the MoneyFit Show, your weekly podcast about real difficult money stories, overcoming financial obstacles, and tips for building healthy money habits. Today's episode, I speak with an actuary who was fired, started house hacking while unemployed, and now owns more than 10 rental units across three states. I'm Todd Christensen, host of the MoneyFit Show podcast, and I hope you'll stick around to hear lessons he learned that we could all use. I'll have what he's having. Jack Allweil is an avid reader, mathlete, and soccer fan. He's on a journey to find the intersection of his actuarial background and love for personal finance through self-directed mini projects. He loves talking about his house hacking, which we're going to get into today, and all about personal finance. Jack Allweil, welcome to the MoneyFit Show.
Thanks so much, Todd. It's great to be on here.
Hey, Jack. Okay, I have not interviewed an actuarial before. I don't even know if I've spoken with one before, but let me ask you this. Did you always want to be an actuarial?
So I did not always want to be an actuary. I didn't even know what one was until probably my last year in college. Now, I was a math major in undergrad, and it's kind of crazy that I didn't really know of them because there was an actuarial science program at my school. Mm-hmm. And one of my frat brothers got me to take a night class. It was interest theory, talking about interest rates and time value of money type of things. Yep. And I really got into it, and it was taught by an actuary. So he was an actuary by day and taught this class by night. And it seemed like a good route for me because I was pretty quiet. And what one of the things about this track was, as long as you passed the exams, it seemed like you were pretty solid to get a job. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't, there wasn't like a big like networking component, I guess, or at least I didn't perceive it that way. And I felt like I had neglected some of the networking, and I really liked this class and thought, you know, I'd give it a shot. And I take the first exam. Now they keep adding exams. I just passed my last one, like the end of 2020. Yeah. And I took my first one in 2010. So it took me a long time to get through them all. And there were 8 exams when I started. I think they've added one on now. Mm. But yeah, it's a very difficult road. And a lot of practice.
I've heard it's one of the best highly rated careers for people who go into math. I mean, I just heard about it about 15 years ago myself.
It definitely caught some traction. It kept ranking very well in the life balance or work-life balance on like mm-hmm. those Yahoo lists and things. And that's kind of where a lot of people started hearing about it. And now there's more competition and more people are taking the exams, and mm-hmm. it's become a little more cutthroat.
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm going to ask the question that a lot of my listeners are going to ask that I would have asked a few years ago. What can you give me a simple definition of what an actuary does?
Sure. So a lot of times it's dealing with uncertainty and cash flows into the future. So there's a lot of modeling of uncertainty. So it's projecting cash flows into the future. It could be dealing with life insurance. So you're modeling using mortality tables. So, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's also a component of discounting it to the present. And a lot of, I'd say a large majority of actuaries work for insurance companies currently. Right. And a lot of it involves either pricing the products or valuing the reserve. So in terms of putting a number on how much the company should hold in reserves to pay out the future claims, whether it's life insurance mm-hmm. or annuity payments, mm-hmm. and any sort of guaranteed features. So it's kind of like a glorified budgeter, you could think of it as.
Yeah, on a much larger scale than personal or household. A lot of taking into account risk factors and future possibilities. And interesting. It's really interesting for those who love data, I would assume.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I just wanted to put it out there and what an actuary does, but I'd like to talk to you a little more about some of the things you do as far as personal finance and how, and your, I want to get to what you call house hacking, but let's go back. If we could, a few years, 2016, you're employed as an actuary, right?
Yep.
And something happens that day that changed the, at least part of the direction of part of your life, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the big deal about 2016 for you?
So I moved down to North Carolina in 2015, and I had, I would say, trouble adjusting and trouble staying balanced in my life with school, with studying, work, and then social life. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, I unfortunately lost my job, and I could kind of feel it coming. I had failed an exam, an actuarial exam, and I just felt like dejected, a little depressed. I felt like my work product, it was the failures on the exams were spilling over into my work product. And I unfortunately got let go at the end of 2016. And it was really kind of, I guess I would call it my great reset. Just gave me some time. And I mean, luckily I had cheap rent at the time because I might've been in trouble, but I had cheap rent, and I decided to take a trip to Europe to see where my grandparents grew up in like Poland and Hungary. And I, oddly enough, met my now wife in Vienna, Austria on that trip.
So you lose your job and you said, okay, I'm leaving the country for a little bit. That was pretty much it.
It's not
take advantage of the time.
Traditional thinking. But I mean, a lot of times, yeah, when I was working, I would always think, man, if I just had the time to go do this stuff, and then all of a sudden, well, I do have the time. So I'd kind of be a hypocrite not to, but like I said, I had pretty cheap rent at the time. I was living in this community where we got subsidized housing to throw events for young adults. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a unique situation. So I kind of had a part-time job almost. I mean, my rent ended up being like $450 a month, I think, at the time.
Wow. Yeah. So you must've been put yourself in a position that, personal finance wise, that you were able to even consider that. That's, like you say, that's not the traditional reaction to that kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had very much appreciated how much the living expense in a traditional person's life is. I mean, it can oftentimes be, 30, 40, 50% sometimes. And when I first moved to Charlotte, I was spending, I think, $1,300 with all the utilities. And I was studying so much, I didn't really get to appreciate or have fun with some of the amenities there. So I just figured, I mean, this is just a waste. I need to find something that's a little more conducive to how much I'm studying right now.
Were there some habits or mindsets that you developed yourself or that you kind of inherited from a family, a parent that had you kind of thinking this way that, I don't want to be wasteful because you basically were preparing for the future. You knew that you didn't need to be spending all that money.
I would say I came from a family. We did not really discuss finances a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's on the uptrend with families, but it was not a typical conversation. I did not know a lot about my parents' finances. And but I remember early on, my mom would let us ride our bikes to the bank, even if we had just a couple dollars in change, and we could go. She showed us how to, deposit that money into a bank account. Yeah. So we did have some stuff, and they were encouraging us to kind of be a little more entrepreneurial. Like my mom would go buy us like these candies at like Sam's Club in bulk, and we could sell them at school.
Right.
we got in trouble for this with the principal a couple of times, but but it was kind of things like that I kind of do think they helped us learn.
Yeah, some entrepreneurship and initiative. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you lose your job. You head to Europe. You meet your future wife, which is, yep, I think, cool. And Hopefully he's sharing that on a podcast appropriate for that, but I think that's great. What were some resources, were there people or service app that kind of got you through? I don't know how long you were there, but that you used while you were there to pay rent or to take care of your finances back home even?
Well, luckily when I got fired, I think I had about $15,000 saved at the time. So I actually wasn't too concerned about rent. I only went to Europe for 2 weeks. So this was not it was not an extended period of time. Now I was unemployed about 6 months. Mm-hmm. The one thing that really touched me, other than meeting my now wife, but when I visited the Auschwitz concentration camp outside of Krakow, my grandfather grew up in Krakow. Yeah. And luckily he fled before the war started and the Nazis took over. Good. But I had so many questions, and I was never a big reader going into that trip, but I just started reading about World War II. And that kind of trickled over into reading more about personal finance. And I read a lot of soccer books. I just started reading like voraciously while I was unemployed. And one of the things that kind of stuck out was I just wanted to take a little more responsibility for my life, and I wanted to create a more robust life. So I would hopefully be able to withstand if this were to happen to me again, I'd be a little more resilient. So I decided I wanted to buy a house as soon as I got another job, and I want to rent out the other rooms. Okay. To cut my living expense to as little as possible, so something like this wouldn't affect me so much.
So you say a robust life. Are you talking just personal finance, or was it more a wider definition than that, or you just want to be set for financially when something like this happened?
It's not total. I mean, I'd say predominantly like finances, but I also took that there was another book called Early Retirement Extreme that goes through a lot of like personal, I would call it personal economics, not just personal finance. He talks a lot about instead of outsourcing so much of your life's activities, just to become more of a generalist, become pretty good at a lot of things. And like, it could be just like cooking more on your own, like saving on food that way, but you're like becoming a better cook. And also another thing I did was I kind of like just watched a lot of YouTube videos on how to like build certain things. So when I did buy the house, one of the summers, I actually put a calisthenics park in the back. So I theoretically wouldn't need a gym membership.
Right.
So things like that.
This was in Charlotte, right?
This is in Charlotte. Yep.
So is it not too terribly cold in the winter?
Right. Exactly. Nice. Yeah. I'd say when I say robust, I'd say mostly, just finances, I guess.
Got it. So you're starting to do all this reading, and you buy a home. And how long did it take you before you started renting out rooms? How many rooms? How did it go? I mean, what was your early experience? Mm-hmm. People are really... I mean, actuaries talk about risk. I mean, that seems like a risk for a lot of people. Like, I don't want strangers in my home, or I don't know if they're going to pay on time. How do you get them out if they don't pay?
Yep.
What was your experience like early on?
Yeah. So I started house hacking in 2017. I got a house that was about to go into foreclosure. It's a little outside of the uptown area of Charlotte, probably 15 minutes to uptown. And I guess one thing that probably deterred a lot of people was it had a pool in the back, and it was like jet black. Like, you couldn't see the bottom, very dirty, but in my mind, I'm
pool,
like,
it was a pool and not an oil rig or something like that. Right?
Yeah. But I guess if I'm going to be living here and thinking as like a renter, I mean, I like having a pool. I know a lot of people would think of it as a huge liability, but at the time I thought, it's a great idea. And it'll be a little more attractive going up against some of these other rental places. Mm-hmm. So I got it's a 4-bedroom, 3.5-bath. And I actually used a loan from my 401k to help with the down payment. And that was kind of how I went about the financing. There was one room that had no door. So I put a new door on, and I actually put individual locks on each of the bedrooms just so people could feel a little more secure. Sure. So that was another thing. And then when I did the screening of the tenants, I would use, there was a website called My Smart Move, and you can basically just put in the email address of the potential tenant and they'll get a link to sign in and put their vital information. So you as the landlord aren't getting to see any vital information, but you get a background and credit report sent to you. And I think that helps, well, help me feel comfortable with the people moving in. And I think it helped the tenants too, because they understand that I'm putting all the tenants through this. So they've all been screened. And yeah, that was kind of early on. I'd say it took about probably 3 months, 3 or 4 months from when I first moved in to rent out the other three rooms.
Okay. That's not too bad.
No. So,
but you, how long before you had that first roommate or renter?
I think I actually kind of like went easy at first just because I was just trying to fix some things up. So I don't think I started looking until like a month and a half or 2 months. So I actually filled it pretty quick once I started looking for roommates.
So you get three roommates, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that their rent covered your mortgage?
So actually early on, I had it on a 30-year mortgage. And I think I was cash flowing like just a little bit, like maybe $100 or so. But what I actually did about a year into this process, I moved out of the master bedroom into one of the smaller rooms that shares a bathroom. Uh-huh. And I was able to rent out the master for more. And I refinanced, and the house had appreciated a good bit. So I actually put it on, and the rents at the time were about $2,300 a month. And I refinanced to get my principal, interest, taxes, and insurance on a 15-year were about $2,200.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it looked like. Now, I guess I guess with the current environment, part of me feels like I wish I would have just maybe refinanced to a 30-year, because I could always pay it down and it would maybe give a little more flexibility. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seemed like a good decision. And
did you have any unexpected challenges early on in being a landlord in your own home?
Sure. Definitely that there's always like roommate dynamics you have to worry about, but there was a month where one of the tenants was supposed to be leaving at the end of the month, and she ended up staying like 4 or 5 days into the next month.
Right.
And there was an abnormally large water bill that was due to a cracked, like the piping or the line going from the street into the house.
Right.
And, I mean, the water bill went up, and the lease was that we would split all the utilities. And so basically by her staying in the extra 4 days, she kind of exposed herself to the next month. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ask them to fix any of the pipe going. And it was like a $4,000 fix.
Ouch.
So I mean, they're not obligated to chip in for that, but the water bill was a little higher. Now she didn't really see it the same way I was seeing it. So she actually, took me to like a mediation, and I'd never been part of this.
Yep.
So it was just, I was very worried and scared because I had never done it before. Uh-huh. But basically I just told her to not worry about the utilities she owed me, and we just called it even. She was also going through a lot of stress. I think her mom was in the hospital at the time. So there's just a lot of like stress going around, and which I could get and understand. Yeah. So I'd say that was like the roughest part, but I've had pretty good luck with my roommates. And I think that's testament to screening on the front end.
That sounds important. What would you say? Would you say that there is a surprising upside that you weren't expecting as to have roommates? What was something that you're like, I this was something I really enjoyed or I liked or that has really been helpful to me?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I really would say I enjoyed, but I learned a lot about fixing the pool. Because I was cleaning it, vacuuming it myself. So a lot of the daily maintenance early on I was doing, and then eventually I kind of got a hold of what it costs to run a pool, and it was expensive. And plus I was having to, I didn't feel quite comfortable testing the water. So I would have to take a sample into the store down the street, and then they would tell me what chemicals to put in. Mm-hmm. And they're probably incentivized to, to give you a little more chemicals than what you might really need. So I understood how much I was spending on the pool, I kind of interviewed some pool cleaners, and they haven't been super consistent. I've gone through a couple different services, but I've been appreciative of learning about pool maintenance, I guess.
Become your own pool boy, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So and, now this and, is not the, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is not the only place that you have now. Or do you even still have that home?
Yes, I still live in there. Actually, so my wife now lives in here with me, and we're actually trying to fix up the kitchen, and we're going to repaint all the walls, and mm-hmm. we're going to try to refinance and pull some cash out to hopefully put into some other investment properties.
Do you have other investment properties right now?
Yes. So I have, so I started house hacking 2017. And another, I guess, huge knock-on effect of house hacking is you start learning about real estate more. And I became very interested in a lot of podcasts. I started listening to the Bigger Pockets podcast, like religiously.
Yeah.
And so that it gave me a lot of ideas on how to parlay this experience into more. So I ended up buying three homes in Michigan by where I grew up. In mm-hmm. 2018 from
in
a
one,
couple
go in 1 year
in 1 year, all, mm-hmm. all from a couple going through a divorce. And that was basically a strategy that I had heard on Bigger Pockets. Uh-huh. Like I was calling property managers, just cold calling and seeing if any of their clients were looking to get rid of their properties for any reason. And that's kind of how I got those three. And then this year, I actually decided even with the 10% penalty on a 401k surrender, I surrendered one of my 401ks to buy a 7-unit also in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And recently, about 2 months ago, we bought a short-term rental in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. So, Myrtle Beach being a historically, whatever, vacation or a tourist destination in the area, right?
Yep. Yeah. I kind of thought it would be good to diversify a little bit away. Cause I mean, Michigan, it seems the cash flow's fairly good right now, but I don't think it's going to appreciate a lot. And I was also slightly worried about, I had put some of the tenants, I mean, it's like good and bad to lock in some of the tenants. So I put them on 2-year leases actually, mm-hmm. Just to lock them in. But if there is like real inflation and those rents don't keep up, that could be an issue. And that's kind of what I was thinking with like maybe diversifying a little bit into a short-term rental. And that way, if the market can demand a higher rate for a particular night, then we'll get a higher rate.
You can adjust that pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you get to enjoy that home very often because you're in Charlotte? That's a two-hour, three-hour drive or
yes, it's 3 hours. And the great thing, it's this Myrtle Beach property is incredibly seasonal. The high season's like April to September. So we've used it once since we got it. And since it's the down season, it's not really a problem. It doesn't really rent that much in these cold months. So we will be able to enjoy it a little bit.
All right. What was your big concern about getting a short-term rental? I mean, what were, What would your concern before you got it, and has it been justified?
So I think time will still tell, but I think the, so this was in a, it's called, they call them condotels. I'd also never heard of this term. It looks like a hotel from the outside. And my wife and I stayed at another condotel. And when we got to the check-in, they're like, are you checking in for a hotel or a condo? And it got me thinking. And then we started looking at these other condotels that had units for sale. And this was totally new to me. I'd never heard of a structure like this, but they have HOAs. So that was, I guess, a worry. And so, I mean, I looked into some of the reports they gave us, but I honestly, I might've wanted to do a little more due diligence, but they were selling so fast. We had to make a decision.
Did you get into a brand new one or?
No, it's not. Oh. It's not brand new.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right downtown and seemed like a great location. And I mean, we saw the rent rolls from the last couple of years. And so we did some due diligence on that. I mean, another thing was, now this property manager takes a huge cut. It's like they get 40%. Now they also do a lot more work than my property managers in Michigan that are basically collecting rent and fixing the occasional toilet or whatever. But yeah, I mean, this is like a full on, I mean, they're cleaning it after every guest. And so it's a lot more work. So I kind of got that, but,
it's a little different than an Airbnb or a Vrbo where you, you have to hire your own cleaners or do the cleaning yourself.
Right? Yeah. And that was actually I actually looked into setting up an Airbnb in Charlotte, and the stumbling block I kept getting was I couldn't find cleaners with flexible schedules. So it seemed like I almost needed many units to be able to pull it off. Like I'd almost need my own cleaning crew.
Right.
So that was kind of, I mean, maybe now it would be a little different if I looked at it, but at the time it seemed like it was a headache to set up.
Well, over the past year or so, and probably into the near future, that sounds like you're experiencing what many employers are experiencing, just trouble getting somebody to do the work for you that's available at the time you want them.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you took a loan for to finance your first home or for the down payment out of your 401k.
Yep.
I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with that or how is that just for 401ks or IRAs as well? Or do you know much about that?
I do not personally have an IRA, so I don't want to say something that's wrong, but I feel like you're always allowed to borrow against the principal that you put in, but don't quote me on that. The 401k, you can borrow. I think the max is like, if you had I think it's like half of what is in your 401k or up to a max of 50,000. But also I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think that's what I saw last I checked.
And then you have to pay it back to yourself. I mean, future self with interest.
Yep. Yeah. It was like 5% interest going back into the 401k, but so at least you're paying yourself interest.
Yeah. So how did that, what did you do for your second, when you started, when you bought the places up in Michigan?
So that was a very unique experience. And I probably would have given up had I not been listening to Bigger Pockets so much, because they talk about all these different ways to finance deals. And one of them is owner financing or the seller financing. And because I originally looked at some traditional banks and they said, well, I mean, you don't really have a track record. We don't really feel comfortable lending you money at this time.
Right.
And so I basically asked the realtor, well, can you just ask the owners if they would finance it for me? And I could give them a pretty big portion of the amount, but they would finance the rest and I'd give them a higher interest rate. And they agreed to do that. So that's how I got into that deal.
Nice. So, I'm going back into your trip to Europe where you said you started getting into a lot of reading and podcasts. And so it really, That sounds like it really had it really changed the trajectory of your professional life and your personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. Ways, right? I sometimes like almost worried, like, had I not been fired, where would I be? Cause I kind of just felt like I was at the time, it felt like I was going through the motions a little bit. Like I wasn't fully awake to, I wasn't really living intentionally, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So you're now fully employed. You're full-time employed again.
Yep.
So I would imagine a question that a lot of us have is how does that work as far as your time? You're working 8 to 5, 9 to 5, whatever. And then you've got these homes. How often do you have to work to be available as a landlord?
So the cool thing about long distance real estate is, I guess you're forced to set up systems. So I have some property managers that manage the Michigan properties, and they take 10% of the gross rents, mm-hmm. and they give me an invoice every month with basically the net rents. Mm-hmm. In terms of my work, I'd say actually right now is about the most work I do. I do not have a bookkeeper, so I do have to input all the rents and expenses that I'm going to need to send over for taxes.
Tax time.
Yeah. So I'd say right now is kind of the most work that I have to do. I do not really communicate with any of the tenants. That's the job or the duty of the property manager. So I've luckily removed myself kind of from the system, but during tax season, it seems to be my busy time.
Right. Right. Well, as we approach the end of our conversation, which I've really enjoyed and appreciated, Jack, great insight into your own experience that we can all look at, can consider for our own. What would you, we probably have some listeners that have gone through or are going through or about to go through unemployment. They think that they're about to lose their job or have lost their job. What's one thing that you would tell your past self either to do differently or to confirm, hey, do this again? And what is it that you would tell somebody that is feeling like, you know, this is a really bad thing to lose my job?
Yeah, it's obviously very tough, and it's easier said than done to kind of stay calm and try to, as much as you can, have a long-term view. And I think one thing that I really started appreciating when I lost my job and I started reading a lot was a lot of people overestimate how much influence they can have in other people's life, but underestimate how much influence they can have in their own life. Mm-hmm. And if you just start taking a little more responsibility, you really can change your life if you devote some time to it.
Right. Thank you. And what is, do you have a practical piece of advice or step sure. that you would recommend for people to follow?
I mean, yeah. I mean, well, one thing that really helped me with my finances was just tracking it, because mm-hmm. there's that saying, whatever gets measured gets managed. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, one thing I do is every 10 days I sit down and record basically my personal balance sheet. So assets, liabilities, and, you can use some of those account aggregators like Personal Finance or Mint, mm-hmm. are all good. And I think that helps a lot, because I think, and this is something like Robert Kiyosaki talks a lot about in his books, that people pay a little bit too much attention to how much money they're making and not how much they're keeping.
Right.
And one way to look at that is your balance sheet. How is your balance sheet progressing over time?
Yeah. Good. Yeah. It's, I've used the something similar in my classes. It's not how much you make, it's how much you keep.
Yep.
Okay. Cause you could spend every penny of any income in this country.
Yep.
So Jack, how can, if our listeners wanted to reach out to you or, find you online, where could they do that?
So I have a blog where I actually show my personal balance sheet. That's at firedtofire.com. And then if you want to shoot me a line just on LinkedIn, I'm the only Jack Allwile on there. So those are the two best places to find me.
All right. I'll definitely put those in the show links. Do take advantage of those, talking to my listeners here. Okay. Well, Jack, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your time and the story that you've shared.
Thanks so much, Todd.
You bet. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. Please do check out our podcast at moneyfit.org/podcast. Subscribe so that you can be notified each time one of these episodes comes out, typically Monday mornings. And until the next time, please stay money fit and stay well.